And hello, welcome back to Marriage Altar Podcast. My name is Mike.
I am Shanna.
And together we are the Williams family.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Been a crazy day.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy week. We're going to need kayaks to get around.
Yes.
It doesn't stop raining.
Raining in Texas.
Yeah, you know, luckily we've had some heavy downpours, but no tornadoes like the rest of the country. So I feel blessed in that aspect.
Yeah, our house is still standing. We still have electricity.
Yeah.
So we thought, well, let's just go ahead and make a podcast because we can't do anything else.
And we can't be sure if we're going to have electricity in 20 minutes or not. So we're going to try to cram all this into...
Living in the country, that's fun. Yeah.
Gotta love that country life. What was that show, Green Acres? Here's the place to be. It's really not. But here we are.
Here we are. So the first two episodes, we talked a lot about our story of... our marriage and how God has completely saved it. But also, we touched on the addiction that you had, which led to the betrayal, you know, in our marriage, which led to a suicide attempt by you.
Yes.
And throughout, I would say the last several months, you've been kind of uncovering... okay, this didn't just happen like you woke up one day and you just wanted to die. This was like just a slow progression of probably trauma that happened in your childhood, teenage years, even on into when you served in the military and the combat that you saw and that you were involved in. So that really played into your addictions, which in turn affected our marriage.
Yes.
So we decided today we would talk about how trauma affects your marriage.
Okay.
And we are going to go into some statistics later, but I think if we just kind of talk a little bit about trauma, your trauma for what you feel led to talk about, and maybe I could talk a little bit about mine too.
Yeah, let's talk about yours too, because it's a male-female, it's a male and female problem.
And I think that most people don't realize in their marriage that they probably both brought baggage in from some trauma in their past. And I don't want to overuse trauma because it's like, I feel like everybody uses that word. But when you think about what trauma really is, it's just anything that causes pain or it's abnormal. It shouldn't have happened.
Should not have.
So, because we weren't meant to live in this fallen, broken world. So we weren't designed to endure all this suffering and pain that we go through. However,
suicide has been a part of culture since we were created.
Yeah. And I don't think we were meant to live in this, but we do.
We do.
So God does help us and heal us and all that.
Absolutely.
But when people come into marriages, I think they don't realize their own baggage and their own trauma that they're bringing in.
Right.
They're showing, you know, when you first meet someone and you're super attracted to them and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm so in love. Like you only show.
That's how it happened with us.
Right. That you only show the part of you that you want them to see.
Yes.
And for that brief amount of time that you're dating or whatever.
I'd say the first couple of years.
Yeah. Maybe even the first couple of years.
Yeah.
You're able to kind of like be a chameleon in some ways.
Right.
And because you're like, if they really know all my secrets, they really know all the bad stuff about me, they probably wouldn't ever talk to me anyway.
Right.
Which I think that's how with you and I, our situation, you withheld a lot of important information. You lied basically to me about some things because
I didn't tell the truth on a lot of things.
Well, you didn't. You were afraid that if I knew.
Well, that's the stigma that goes along with male depression and male suicide and male. It's not normal in society, or it's really looked down on in society, for a man to have any type of mental issue.
Yeah.
We're looked down on as weak. And to be honest with you, the male mental health is lacking in so many areas when it comes to getting treatment and therapy. You know, society puts you're a weak man, and nobody wants to be classified as the weak link in the chain. You know, you don't want to be classified as that. You know, we got a lot of pressure on men to be the provider, to be the spiritual leader, to be the work leader, to be a good father, to be a good husband, to be a good son.
To have it together all the time.
You have to, you know, because society is just that way. It makes you feel like if you have one moment of weakness in your life, then you're never going to get it back again.
And I think with you, if you were afraid that if you showed me that you were having a weak moment or you were struggling, then all of a sudden that would change the way that I look at you, and I would perceive you as being weak, and you couldn't allow that. So
that's
you
95%
hit it.
Of men out there, you know. You know, any guy that I know or guys that I know and stuff like that, they pride themselves on one thing, that's being a protector of the family.
Mm.
Can't be a protector if you look down on as being weak and, oh, you're just depressed today. You need to get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you need to climb up out of the depression. But it's not that easy. Once depression gets a hold of you, it just sucks you down a dark tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
And the light at the end of the tunnel gets lower, and it gets dimmer and dimmer and dimmer the longer that you're there. But men work through it just so we can still provide. We can still be a good husband, a good father. Even though you don't feel like getting up in the morning and doing anything, the stress keeps building and you keep not saying anything.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually there's going to be a breaking point. There is.
Absolutely. And I think if we go back to some stuff that you dealt with as a teenager, as a child, that was kind of ingrained in you, your dad, you probably didn't see that he had a lot of emotions. He wasn't allowed to, probably.
He probably wasn't.
And then he wasn't there a lot.
He wasn't. Dad had the best marriage of any man that I ever knew. He was never home. Dad worked the first 12 years of my life, my dad worked offshore oil company. At the time, he was on the largest oil rig in the world, which is the Alaskan Star for Western Oceanic. And he worked his way up to tool pusher. So he was basically running the rig. He was home. He was gone for 2 weeks, 3 weeks at a time, and he was home for 2 weeks. But he often didn't stay the full two. He'd come home and get his family fixed, and then he'd go back out in the oil field and work.
So there wasn't a lot of interaction between you?
No, not really. You know, not really a whole lot of action. It was more, you know, I have two older brothers. But they were so busy doing their own thing, I basically was occupying myself. You know, you know, every kid that age in the 70s would look to, you know, your superheroes as your role models, you know. But as far as anyone showing me technically how to be a man or, you know, showing me the ropes, there wasn't really anybody around.
Well, but I also think with you, it was a lot of things. I know that you guys struggle financially.
All
so
the time.
Poverty is a big traumatic thing for kids to go through.
Yeah, my dad was too proud to get on food stamps.
Mm-hmm.
He said that he would never do it. He wouldn't even entertain the idea of getting on food stamps in his house. So a lot of times we ate beans and rice and cornbread. Mm-hmm. Occasionally we had some meat. But I remember growing up, and many times we'd get our protein from beans, you know, carbohydrates from rice, and you have cold cereal every morning because it's cheap, you know.
So, and then the moving around that you guys did.
We went to 1 year of high school. I went to 4 different high schools that 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
Totaling all in all, from the time that I was in the 6th grade to my senior year, I went to probably 12 or 13 different schools at one time. But my dad didn't have a good education. You know, dad was a blue collar worker. He didn't really have a whole lot of very smart guy. But I think he quit school in like the 6th grade, and went into the Navy. But his grandfather, he was living with at the time, came out and pulled him out. Said he's not gonna come in. You're going to discharge him. So they discharged my dad from the Navy. I kind of lost my train of thought there. Where was I going with that?
Well, just the moving around that you guys did. And I think that created a lack of stability.
It did. It
but also, you, I think, didn't feel loved, which is
well, my
a
brother
huge
James,
trauma.
Now, even before we started moving around a lot, my youngest memories are my brother James and Carl getting everything they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things were pretty good whenever they were kids. They, you know, now the physical abuse was really bad with James and Carl. You know, dad really physically abused them. And I guess, you know, there's always the kind of running joke in the family that dad got all the physical abuse out on James and Carl before I was born. But I remember some times where there were some pretty harsh circumstances there. But after my oldest brother graduated high school and Carl left the house and kind of went out in his own world, he went to the Job Corps and got a career there. And after that, we sort of moved around all the time. It was like my mom and dad sacrificed and sacrificed and sacrificed for the oldest son. But then whenever we came along and we were going to school, my dad didn't have enough education to understand that you would constantly be ahead of a class or you constantly be behind a class. So say I moved from a school in Texas to a school in North Carolina one year, which I did. Well, when I got there, they were like 5 or 6 weeks ahead of me. Mm-hmm. So I had to study and study and study just to catch up. And then I remember bringing home my report card and I had a C on it. And I got a spanking because I had a C. And when I told my parents, hey, this is why this is happening, it was like speaking to a stone wall. My dad was like, nope, school is school. You're not trying hard enough. Mm-hmm. And then he ground me or punished me in some.
Which that further reinforces the lie that as a man, you can't have any emotions. You can't make excuses. You can't tell anybody if you're struggling. You can't get help because you're made to feel like when you do ask for it, what is your problem? Just get it together.
Right. Just get it together. Yeah. My mother always said, well, you guys are living your best life because you get to see all these new places. And I'm like, man, I don't want a best life. I just want to have friends.
Yeah. And I think what was missing was love.
Yeah, absolutely.
Feeling loved.
Which there wasn't a whole lot of that in the house.
I think, I'm not saying that they didn't. I never would say that. I'm sure they did.
Yeah.
But showing it and feeling it are two different things.
Yeah, my mom and dad weren't very huggy, touchy type of people. Just never really showed a whole lot of affection growing up. You know, if you get a good grade, they're like, good job. You know, or if you get a bad grade, you get beat. I remember when I was saved when I was 12, 13 years old. Living in Mississippi. I would say when I was 12 or 13, and my dad was with my mom, had stayed home that day. She wasn't feeling well or something. And dad came home, and he was like, Mom? He always called her Mama. And he said, Mama, Michael got saved today. And she's like, okay. And I remember looking at her, and he's like, is that the only thing you got to say? She's like, well, what do you want me to do, throw a party about it? And I'm like,
yeah.
Wow, man. I mean,
that's exactly what you need to do.
Yeah, really, because the angel's saying and another guy's going to heaven in your family. You know, I wasn't asking for a whole lot, but, you know, something. Give me something.
Well,
man.
And I also think that neglect
there was a lot of
is
that
a
too.
Huge form of trauma for children.
Well, you know, neglect makes you reach into dark places.
Yes.
To get
and that's,
affection
that's where
and
we're
affirmation.
Go.
And that's where we're going to go with this episode.
But I wanted to kind of build that up for the people listening because I think some people think, oh, trauma is only like if you were sexually abused or trauma is only if you were like physically beaten all the time. No, trauma is, it can be so many things that if a child needs something and they're not getting their needs met, that is trauma as well.
Yeah, trauma comes in many shapes or forms, mental, physical, you know, there's a numerous things that can be trauma. If you're sitting there and your mother refuses to talk to you for 3 or 4 hours.
Yeah, absolutely. Emotional neglect.
That's emotional neglect. Yeah. If you refuse to get food stamps because your family is basically starving to death and your pride is keeping you from getting it, that's physical and emotional neglect.
Yeah.
So it comes in many shapes and forms. And unfortunately, my family, you know, we experienced a whole lot of that. You know, we really did. It leads into lack of self-worth. It leads
Absolutely.
Into self-doubt in yourself, body dysphoria, always thinking that you're not good enough just by saying, well, that's, you know, okay, good. Do better next year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it makes you seek affirmation and good feelings in other ways.
Yeah, everybody.
Yeah.
Subconsciously wants dopamine.
Absolutely.
Even if we don't know the chemical, we don't know the word for it, we don't understand the chemical process.
Right.
We want to be happy.
Absolutely.
We were created to feel good emotions. not negative ones.
Well, we want to feel loved.
Yes.
You know, and parents out there today, and I'm pretty sure there are some men who are in this. I'm sure there's men and women who are in a similar situation similar to mine. And I'm going to tell you right now, dads, you are one of the most important parts of your kid's life. And I'm going to tell you why. For any of you new fathers out there, and you know, soon-to-be dads, or even dads who have several kids, that child looks up to you on how he is supposed to treat a woman. If he sees you arguing with your wife, if he sees you downing your wife, this cooking is not good enough. You know, verbal abuse, physical abuse, or anything like that. He watches you. There's a really good song by Blake Shelton saying, "I've been watching you. Ain't that cool?" And they imprint that into their minds, and they're going to beat you one day. So if you want your children to be the best people they can be, moms and dads, if you're going to argue, if you're going to disagree, do it in private. Don't do it in front of your kids, because your kids are watching, and you're the example for your kids on how to be an adult.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Physical abuse really just messes the kid up. If you see your dad physically abusing your wife or your mother, he's going to do it to his, because he thinks that's the norm. Mm-hmm. You know. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. So walk me through how you go from you're getting to be a teenager and you're miserable and
yeah.
you're crying all the time, probably in a
I was very depressed.
Yeah.
You know, go ahead.
You didn't have any friends or anybody, because you guys were you moving all the time at that
point?
Yeah,
we're moving all the time at that time. Mm-hmm. Dad had gotten a job with a company called DaVinci Construction, and they were doing fiber optic cable. And they got this huge contract to go all the way across the U.S. for along the railroad to lay. It was the first of its kind fiber optic cable. And the moving became really, really steady. Always, there were several times when we were homeless, you know, living in hotels, mm-hmm. you know. So growing up feeling like I didn't have a whole lot of self-esteem. I didn't know what a normal family was like. But then when you become a teenager, you start having these urges, and you start looking at, like, if you're a man, you start looking at women differently. If you're a woman, you start looking at boys differently. And I didn't have anybody to talk to about sex. I didn't have anything to talk to about men and how we're supposed to react to these feelings that we're having. And so it really came to a head. We were living in a little town in Mississippi called Leakesville. And I had a back bedroom all to myself. And one day, as most boys do, you wake up, things are awake. And self-satisfaction started, and that threw me full-blown into sexual addiction.
Super quick, because,
yeah,
I mean, the chemical, what's going on physiologically is there's a flood of dopamine. There's a flood of adrenaline.
Absolutely.
For once in your life, you actually feel good.
I actually felt good, yeah. I felt good about myself. You know, I felt good about life. You know, I looked at myself a little bit differently. And that just flooded over into my personal life. And not knowing anyone, not getting that positive affirmation from my parents or my brothers for that part. You know, like around that time, mm-hmm. I was the oldest son. My brother Doug got all the attention. He's the youngest. You know, my parents really sacrificed a lot for my brother
Doug.
Which
is a common thing for the middle child to
yeah.
say that's
yeah.
that also it plays into addiction.
Yeah, I quickly became
people.
The black sheep of the family.
Yeah.
And through sexual addiction, that's how I would express myself.
Well, it's no different than someone finding or getting in, you know, a doorway into drugs or open
yep.
for them when they're 13 or 14. Maybe it started with smoking pot. And then it's like, oh, well, let me try this. And then before you know it, they're 25 and they're addicted to meth. They've destroyed their life. It's absolutely literally no different than what you did.
Yeah, I think the one thing that kept me from going into drugs very bad is that I didn't have any friends.
You didn't have any money.
I didn't have any money, yeah. But I didn't have any friend influences.
Right.
You know, I think that going to a different school every few weeks or every couple of months, it kind of saved me from the drug culture. Now, the alcohol is easy to get. You know, there's always a bootlegger somewhere or someone like that mm-hmm. that would get you alcohol. They charge you 2 beers.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, so the alcohol became pretty prevalent from the time I was 15. Up until
in addition to the sexual addiction.
In addition to the sexual addiction. Yes.
So those were your teenage years.
Yes. Teenage years were a blur basically. Going from school to school, home to home. Lay down. Yeah. Going from home to home, school to school, and feeling worse and worse about myself. So self-pleasure, sex in school became the ways that I found the dopamine release. And as an adult sex, you get the dopamine release. It feels really good, you know, and that was the only thing that I could do to make myself forget about myself because I was getting nothing from my parents around that time.
Yeah.
Got through my teenage years. I graduated high school in 1990. And I tried to go to college. I was too poor, couldn't afford I got a scholarship for anything. For theater arts, believe it or not. And I went to a little college here in Texas for one semester, and I couldn't afford it. Couldn't afford the housing. So I signed up for the military. And I'm just going to say, women love soldiers,
mm-hmm.
you know. And for 18 years, I was very sexually active. I was, you know, you go on deployments. You'd be gone for a few months to a year. Then you'd come home and you would just be wide open.
Yeah.
You know, all you could think about was getting your next fix.
Well, I mean, but there's the element of not only did you have the sexual addiction that formed in your teenage years, mm-hmm. now you're dealing with combat and PTSD. So, of course, you're going to go back to the thing that made you feel better.
Yeah, you know, if you're not getting the adrenaline rush from being in combat, which most of my veterans out there know, that adrenaline rush is unlike anything that you'll ever experience. If you're not getting that when you get home, then you're going to find it another way, and that's either through my sexual addiction took the place of
A lot of people turn to drugs, alcohol, gambling, pornography.
Right.
It's all the same thing.
Absolutely. It's all the same. Actually affects mostly the same parts of your
brain. The pleasure center of the brain.
Yeah, affects the pleasure center of your brain is activated. And I don't want to say that I enjoy combat, but it fed my addiction.
Right.
It fed it. And they train you how to do it. They train you how to be a combat veteran. They train you to use teamwork, the buddy system. But then
how
when you come home.
How to survive.
Yeah, they teach you how to survive. But then when you get home, they're like, okay, welcome home. You can go see your families now. And you're like, man, I'm screwed up. I don't even know how to act right now. You're going to send me out into civilian population mm-hmm. the way I am? So naturally, you're going to turn to alcohol. In my case, it was just alcohol with me. I never did any type of illicit drugs. You know, we talk about stories about when you're deployed, but the drug use when you're deployed to stay awake or to go to sleep, there was a lot of that. But stateside, it was just strictly alcohol, and we drank a lot of alcohol. Me and my buddies, there was always a party somewhere, and the alcohol was always running freely.
Mm-hmm.
And then you combine alcohol with sexual addiction, and it just sets up a scenario for really bad choices.
Right.
Yeah, it does.
And so, all of that, and you think you're okay when you and I meet.
Right.
You think that you've beat it.
Yeah,
right?
Well, you know, you and I had this conversation a lot about my sexual addiction when I was in the military, and you asked me, were you ever convicted? We talked about porn, which was something that I never watched. I never was into pornography. And she asked, and you asked me why, and I said, because I was instantly convicted. And she said, well, how were you convicted of porn, but you weren't convicted of sex, about sex? And my first response, I was single.
Yeah.
You know, I was single. That, to me, in the military, it's normal.
Mm-hmm.
So you're thinking that you're single and you're doing just what's normal.
It's almost like peer pressure.
There's a lot of peer pressure involved in that.
But you're technically saved.
Technically,
you know?
I was saved when I was
12. But here's the problem with that. You didn't get discipled. You get saved.
Right.
And then you're not surrounded by the discipleship and the love and the growth that you need and the people pouring into you.
Right.
So that you know what the voice of God sounds like, or you know when, you know.
Right.
Certain things you shouldn't do and all these kind of things.
I went straight from being saved to moving all over the country.
Right.
You know, and I hardly ever went to church. My parents were always closet churchgoers, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember when I was living in North Carolina, my parents, we never went to church. I was there for a year. And we had a little church we were part of in Mississippi called Cold Town Baptist Church in Purvis, Mississippi. That's hometown for me, is Purvis. So hello, Purvisites. How y'all doing? And then,
So the million-dollar question, I guess, is how does the trauma play into the addiction, lead into the betrayal?
Okay.
And then how does the marriage get impacted from the unresolved or unhealed trauma?
Okay, so the first thing I'll tell you, an introvert will tell you, that's pride himself. He said, I've got it under control.
Right, right.
That's where the downfall starts, is whenever you think, I've got this under control. I can control this. I can control my alcohol intake. I can control my impulses sexually. I can control all of that. But once you open that door to the demons, once you just have a minuscule thought, once you open your door to it, it comes in and it is nonstop on your mind 24/7. You're constantly finding a way post-military to get that adrenaline rush, to get that good feeling. So what I did is I transferred my love for adrenaline rush. My sexual addiction took over. And then I'm back in the adrenaline rush again. So I was constantly going back and forth with it. You understand what I'm saying?
Sort of.
Yeah. So, you get risky behaviors. You start talking to people, texting with people, and that feeds your adrenaline.
Right.
So
right.
One addiction is feeding the other. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So the sex addiction is feeding the adrenaline addiction, but the adrenaline addiction is the reason why you're using the sex addiction. It's just a perfect scenario for marriage destruction, because what it does is once it's found out that your spouse has been unfaithful, like we did, it completely destroys your security. It destroys the belief system in the marriage. It destroys your faith and trust in the marriage. And getting that back has not been easy, you know, and we're still working on that today. We mm-hmm. really are. Only through counseling. We've got an amazing counselor. But only through our counselor and faith, trust in the Lord, prayer, people, prayer, 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 can you get some semblance of a normal marriage
and
back.
Honesty.
Godless, brutal honesty. It's not always easy to be honest with your wife or your husband about your sexual addiction or your adrenaline rush addiction. Because if you've never been in that situation, then you don't understand it.
But there's so much shame attached to it.
There's a lot of shame. Yes, absolutely. I have a lot of good friends of mine who still drink alcohol, and they're ashamed of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I got a buddy that lives in Pennsylvania. He was drinking. Dwayne could drink some alcohol when we were in the military. And that cost him his marriage. He just falls in love with the drink. You know, it. Sexual addiction, adrenaline rush addiction, alcohol helps you come down.
Mm-hmm.
Or drugs help you come down off of it. And it's all bad. The whole thing is just all bad.
Well, I think really the solution had you have known what you needed when you were a child, which you didn't figure out until you're 50 something years old, that what you were missing was the love of God.
I missed the love of God. But most importantly, I missed the love of my parents.
If I had
that from my parents, none of this would have ever happened.
Maybe so, but I also think that we view God through the lens of, especially our earthly father.
Absolutely.
So whatever kind of relationship we had with our earthly father, we tend to transfer that onto the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
And so for you, you're like, okay, I have an absentee God who doesn't really care about me.
Yes, absolutely.
And so it took you some time for God to get through to you. And I remember saying things to you like, I just don't think you know how much he loves you. And you're just like, whatever.
God doesn't know me. But my favorite saying was, God doesn't know me.
Right. And it would just break my heart when you would say that.
Yeah, God didn't know who I was, in my opinion, you know. And that's just a trap of the devil.
Mm.
You know, it's just a trap of the enemy to keep you from turning to the one thing that can help you, you know. Up until last year, before we found out that all this was going on with me, we had a good marriage.
Right.
You know, we did. We were struggling.
I think that we thought we had a good marriage.
Yeah, we thought we did.
I think what I knew of the marriage and what I knew about you, I thought was good.
Yeah.
But I didn't know all of it.
Right. Yeah. Well,
so
I'm not going to, I couldn't come out and tell you right off the bat when we met you that, hey, I'm a sex addict and adrenaline junkie. You know, I couldn't tell you that.
There were signs that I never picked up on.
There were signs, but I thought I had it under control. We already talked about
that.
Yeah,
but the signs are not what people would think they would be, because for you, your addiction is not like you have this urge to go have sex with
mm-mm.
women.
No.
For you, it's more about it's the risky behavior of flirting and not getting caught, of texting
Absolutely.
And not getting caught. It
Absolutely.
Wasn't really like you were just going out and having sex with every woman.
Well, here's
in the world.
No. There was not that.
It was I don't want people getting the wrong idea.
Yeah. It was texting and talking is what it was. And I tell you what the texting did. It put me in fight or flight mode.
Right.
And from the fight or flight mode, what happens? Massive mm-hmm. doses of adrenaline get dumped into your system, and you get high. I mean, I can still remember that high that happened, and it felt really...
Which one? The one from the battle?
The adrenaline.
Or
the adrenaline.
Just in general.
Yeah, just the adrenaline dump, you know, because you feel invincible around
Well, something people probably don't know, and I didn't know this until I started listening to some psychologists talk about adrenaline. And what it does is it actually, because it puts you in fight or flight, it takes you away from the problems that you're facing. Like if you're facing abandonment, neglect, abuse, not feeling loved, whatever it might be, if you go into fight or flight, all of a sudden that's nothing because you're over here in some other... It actually numbs the pain. Just like when you get into fight or flight, you can't physically feel pain.
Yeah, it blocks pain receptors.
Exactly.
Is what it does.
And so I think we do that to emotionally block things that we don't want to feel.
Absolutely.
And that's what you were doing.
Well, around that time, you know, we were having some financial issues. I had quit travel nursing, and I was working at a little facility here in town, and I was making money, but I wasn't making enough.
You started feeling bad about yourself.
I started feeling inadequate,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I pride myself on being a strong man who is a good provider, who takes care of his wife. And I always said the one thing I was never going to be was my dad. I always said that from when I can remember saying anything, I will not be my parents. And the more that things started rolling around, you know, we went into a big new house and everything started piling up with bills and all that. The money started running out, and I'm realizing there's nothing that I can do about
mm-hmm.
it, you know. And I'm like, I have completely failed in life, you know. And that's when you start saying, I wish I'd never gotten out of the military. You know, the military understood what I was going through.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the military, if I first started feeling bad about myself in the military, I would just deploy,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that would give me the adrenaline fix that I needed. It made me feel worthy because I was getting satisfaction.
Right.
Of knowing that I was doing something that was heroic.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, oftentimes in psychology, what ends up happening is we become the very thing that we wish someone would have been for us.
Absolutely.
So if we wanted someone to save us, then we become a hero.
Yes.
And in our life, when we get older and we're just running around trying to save everyone, but you burn out. you don't deal with the real reason that's underneath everything, which is you have got to accept the love of God.
Well, it leads to risky behavior, leads to adrenaline burnout. Your adrenal glands get to the point where they just don't do anything anymore. And it requires more and more and more and more stimulation to get there.
Just like a drug.
It is a drug. Absolutely, it is. So whenever you start noticing that the adrenaline dump is getting less, and like me, I was getting older, so I couldn't go skydiving anymore. Yeah, I don't have a motorcycle. We talked about that, and that was. But you know,
I was thinking about it.
Yeah, we're never going to get one. I have no faith in that.
but
you know, when you're a married man, you have responsibilities. And you can't go out and do those extreme things that you want to do because you've got a family to think about now, you know. So it does lead to really bad decisions if you're still addicted to that adrenaline rush. It really does lead to bad decisions.
Yeah.
You're constantly looking for a way to get high. Mm-hmm. That's the way I call it, is I was looking for the high.
And you brought that into our marriage.
I did, and
you hid it so well from me in the beginning as we were dating, which only lasted like 3 months before we got married.
We got married pretty quick.
And it happened so fast that I don't think I realized.
Well, just like with any addict, an addiction is addiction, no matter what it is. Mm-hmm. Addiction is addiction. It stimulates the same parts of your brain. You have withdrawals when you're not on it. Any addict can hide it.
Mm-hmm.
Any addict can make up excuses for why things are the way they are, or they say, well, I only do that because of this, but I don't do it all the time.
Yeah.
You know, like when I was drinking, I wasn't drinking every night. Well, maybe I was. But, you know, I was usually drinking to curb it, to keep it all pressed down. Mm-hmm. So when you're trying to keep it all pressed down, you start drinking more.
Mm-hmm.
And
Trading one addiction for another.
You know, I quit drinking alcohol, so I started drinking Coke Zero. And I got out of hand.
I noticed that you would just switch addictions. You'd be like, oh, well, I'm not doing that anymore. You're like, I'm not drinking Coke Zeros. But then I would see you and you drink like 3 Monsters a day. And I was like, you know those are worse than Coke Zeros, right?
Yeah, my blood pressure and my weight told me that, man.
I'm like, oh, yeah. So, okay.
Yeah, I went from very healthy 208 to 320 pounds. This is before I met her. But because of depression. Absolutely, because I was a failure at everything that I did, and my addictions made me feel that way. You know, because you ruin your life. I've had this addiction since I was 12 years old, and it has cost me marriages. It has cost me a relationship with my children. It has cost me jobs and my own sense of love for myself, because addiction is like this. You got a good angel and a bad angel on each shoulder. And the bad angel wins. And you keep giving an ear to that bad angel because it's more fun living bad than it is living good.
Yeah.
You know?
At first.
At first it is. But then it catches up to you. And when it catches up to you, then it is nonstop conviction by the Holy Spirit. Especially if you're a Christian, it is.
It leads to death. You know, every addiction, if it goes all the way to the end, it's going to result in death. I mean, you tried to kill yourself. Because you could not live with it anymore. You were so tired of it.
One of the things I remember about that day is I kept saying, I'm tired of hurting people.
Right.
You know, I'm tired of hurting. I'm tired of not knowing why I'm hurting people. I'm tired of being alone. And I'm just generally tired of living. I couldn't do it anymore.
Right.
So that's why I was fixing to lose everything, Shay. And I think that little dark angel on my right shoulder said, well, you know what? The only thing you got left to do is kill yourself. And I'm like, you know what? I got one more thing I can do.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Well, let's talk about those stats of men.
Then we got to get on to yours.
It is, I don't know if we said this earlier, but it is Men's Mental Health Awareness Month. And we do know statistically men are way less likely to get help, to get counseling, to even tell people how they feel because they've been shunned and told from the time they're small kids that men don't have feelings. Men don't talk about how they feel.
Well, we know that we have feelings, but it's not cool to talk about your feelings. It's not cool to acknowledge, hey, man, you know what? I'm depressed.
Right.
You know, I don't want to get out of bed every day. Mm-hmm. Well, you get called lazy. I got lucky because you're my spouse and you are amazing. You recognize the symptoms of things that are going on. And instead of me making me feel weak, you make me feel better because you acknowledge my struggles and you help me get through them. But there's a lot of men out there who are married and they don't feel like they can talk to their wives about it, because here's what happens. Honey, I'm feeling kind of down today. We'll just go fishing, you know, or just go drink
just
a beer.
Pull yourself up by your bootstraps. You'll be fine.
That's right. You know? Pull yourself up, man, and get out of it. What's your problem? You got a family to feed. You can't be depressed today.
Right.
You can't be sick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, God forbid you miss a day at work because you just can't get out of bed.
Yeah.
But. Okay, so the suicide rates in 2024, obviously we're still in 2025, and we haven't got all those rates back yet. But the male suicide rate in 2024 was 21.6 per 100,000.
And that's in the male. U.S., right?
That's in the U.S. That's the U.S. suicide rate. That's 14. Now in 2025, the rate was adjusted for suicide. And it's 14.7 deaths per 100,000 individuals, surpassing the 22 rate by a huge margin. And I'll tell you about, I keep harping on veterans because I am one, but I'll tell you why the suicide rate has gone up. It's because you've got these young men, and 18 to 36 is the most common area, or they're the most at risk for suicide.
Mm-hmm.
The age group where suicide rate is attended the most is 55 to 65. So I fell right into that at 53. I lost my train of thought here. But so the reason why the rates have gone up is because we're not in war right now. We're not in combat. You've got all these men, especially the veterans, who came home from years of war, and you're like, okay, what do I do now?
Mm.
You know? I often laugh and joke about my time in the military, special operations. Only thing it taught me how to do in the military when I got out was work on farm tractors.
Mm.
How do you go from carrying weapons and calling in close air support and coordinating with different battalions on what this next, you know, FOB is going to be? How do you go from that to being a civilian?
And I think that's why a lot of veterans go into law enforcement.
A lot of veterans
because they want that. Well, this is the closest thing I can get, or the FBI or whatever,
yeah,
something like that.
Absolutely.
Because it's the closest I can get. But yet, here's what you're doing. You're just keeping that addiction going.
Yeah, absolutely. And
instead of learning how, I'm not saying you shouldn't go into those fields. I mean, that's,
right,
you know, whatever you have
and
to
just
do.
And just to show you the difference in the statistics between males and females. Men, like I said, in 2024 was 21.6, right? The males comprise almost over 80% of the suicides in 2024.
That's what I was thinking. I knew it was a lot higher.
Yeah. Women, 6.4% per 100,000.
Here's what's interesting, though, because I've seen some stats, and I don't have them right now, but typically women get diagnosed with depression more than men.
Because we don't seek treatment.
Right. Women get diagnosed with depression and anxiety disorders way more than men, but men commit suicide more.
Yeah. Well, look at it like this. You know, just over the past few years, we've had that Me Too movement. We've had the feminist movement has blown up. And then you have these traps that are set up for men. I watch them on TikTok all the time. You got this girl working out in the gym, and she sees a man just look her way, and she's like, have you got a problem?
Right, yeah.
And the guy worked there. You know, he's like, well, I'll just kick you out the next time. So we got to where we get in trouble for being a man.
Right.
Called toxic masculinity.
Right.
I hate that word.
Right.
I want to strangle people every time I hear it. Man, I'm going to tell you right now, there is nothing about you that's toxic. Now, if you are abusive.
Obviously, that's different.
Obviously, that's a different story. But being a man and having male urges, hunting, fishing, hang out with the boys, there is nothing toxic about that.
I mean, that's what attracts. Let me just say this, and we'll probably get some backlash on this, but for most women, that's what attracts us to a man, is
right,
that he is a man, not
absolutely
that he's, you know, let society shape him into this weak,
yeah,
feminized man.
Well, you know, there was a study that was done a few years ago. It's pretty interesting about that, and it goes along with women's cycles. Women like men, but when you go on your cycle, What you look for is a strong chin, some very, very masculine men who are fit, mm-hmm. who have great careers, because, well,
instinctually, that's just
instinctually
what happens.
The breeding cycle. You're right. Looking for the best DNA that you can find.
Even if you realize it or you don't realize it or not, you are doing it.
Absolutely. It is in your subconscious.
It breaks my heart because I'm not anti-women at
right.
all.
I'm not either.
I'm not, but I don't like all the male bashing that's going on.
Oh,
I don't
gosh.
Like all of the women who are trying to feminize men.
Right.
Or try to make them just be less masculine so that they're more, I don't know, acceptable. But
well, you've got women that convince men to be feminists.
Right.
How in the heck can a man be a feminist?
I think men can be advocates for women having
well, yeah.
equal rights, which we have in America, but
absolutely.
Equality in all areas, but men and women are just different.
Yeah, we're just
which
different.
I think is a whole other episode that we can talk about. But
yeah.
I just think the statistics are staggering that so many more men, I think you said 80-something%.
Yeah.
Of the suicides that happen are men. And if that doesn't grab your attention,
right.
and then on top of that, 22 veterans a day are committing suicide. Their
yeah.
their rates of veteran men committing suicide versus civilian men are staggering too. It's
yeah.
it's way more veterans than
it is. It is way more veterans.
Non-veterans. So I think there's
that,
just something.
But like I said, we've been in a constant state of war for the past 20-something years.
Right.
You know, and you've got men who weren't even born who went to war. They weren't even born whenever the war started on 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they weren't even around.
They don't even really know what it was like to see
right.
those towers.
So they have grown up. Okay,
into.
This is the most heavily TV watched generation I've ever
mm-hmm.
seen. I mean, even us, when our TV went out, we started having withdrawals. So,
right.
but this younger generation, they're raised on video games of combat.
Mm-hmm.
They're raised on seeing combat on television. They're raised on, hey, Uncle Mike came home from Iraq this time. Let's go see him, see how he's doing. The first thing you usually hear, hey, did you kill anybody?
Mm,
you know,
almost
the
like
first
it's a game or something.
Almost like it's a game because it is a video game.
Well, they're desensitized by what the
right.
violence that's
right.
on
that's what, and
TV.
That's what it is these kids these days are desensitized.
Mm-hmm.
These kids have all they've known is war,
mm-hmm.
you know, and now that there's no more war to do, what are we supposed to do with these people? You know, veterans out there, like this guy has known war his entire life.
Mm-hmm.
He's 22 years old. He just came back from Iraq for the last time. And there's no more war to go to.
Well, I'm just thinking, because, you know, the news story just broke about the veteran who killed his three daughters.
Yeah.
I don't think they yeah. found him yet. But
they haven't found him yet. I don't know if
they know
will.
Where he is, kind of. They think they know where he is.
Yeah.
But just, you know, how could this have been prevented had he had a support system, had he had the help
right.
he needed? I don't know. We don't know. Obviously, he probably had PTSD. Who knows? It's a
well,
lot to speculate. But
I'll be honest with you. Veteran Services has been lacking severely since World War II.
Mm. Well, they're still learning about PTSD. They still
yeah.
don't know how to fix it.
And, they don't know.
They, it can't be fixed.
No,
according
it can't
to,
be fixed. You're stuck with it for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
But through...
But you, learning how to deal with it, getting
counseling,
getting
therapy,
some healing.
Drugs.
Right. Finding ways to deal with the adrenaline need, because all...
Right.
people with PTSD usually end up needing adrenaline
absolutely.
To some degree. And
absolutely.
So finding ways to do it that are healthy
right.
and are not going to sabotage your body or your
yeah.
marriage or...
Yeah, that was like whenever we bought our cars. That guy who sold us our cars was a vet.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, oh, yeah, man, I'm part of this great vet group. We drive around in our trucks and shoot things.
Shoot
I'm like,
pigs or something.
We're shooting pigs. I'm like, no.
It doesn't sound like fun.
That's not the type of guy I am, you know. I mean, since we've known each other, I shot a gun, what, 5 times at the dogs next door?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't very popular then for a while. But there are some guys who get out, and they still love weapons.
Mm-hmm.
Me, being around a weapon gives me the heebie-jeebies now. Now, I think that weapons have a place in the household.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not anti-gun. But I got my fill of that stuff when
mm-hmm.
I got out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I did.
Yeah, your need for adrenaline... It shows up in a different
shows up in different,
different
ways.
Ways. But
yeah.
I think the point of this whole episode is, okay, what have you drug into your marriage that, you know, that you didn't get healing from?
Oh my God.
Right. I mean, I'm talking like to the the viewers, like what what have you allowed to creep its way into your marriage? It was traumatic for you and you didn't get what you needed, the healing that you needed, because I think all people bring things in.
I think that marriage needs to start the very real conversation before you get married.
For real.
I believe in premarital counseling. She and I didn't do it, and we were a mess because of this right here.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that premarital counseling is very good. I think that everybody should have to do it, and I'm going to tell you why. Because it helps you come to terms with the way you are. It helps you tell your significant other, your wife or husband-to-be, about the things that have hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
That way your spouse is not blindsided by this stuff 3 years in. You wonder, where's the perfect spouse that I thought that I had?
Who's the person that I married? Who is this? I don't even know who this is.
Well, that's what happened whenever all this came to light. It's like, you're like, I don't even know who you are anymore.
Right.
And I'm like, I'm still me.
But
I'm
like,
just
who
sick.
Who is me?
Like, I'm just sick and I need help.
Right.
You know? And
which is what we did. We got you the help that you needed.
Yeah.
But most of it, honestly, has come from the Lord.
It has.
And
well, you know, and I'm not putting you up on a pedestal. You know, I know you don't like that, but I am going to say that I think that God put you in my life because he knew that all this was going to come out one way or the other. And he knew I needed someone strong in my life that's going to be resilient enough to stay with me and not divorce me.
Right.
You know, and if it hadn't been for you and your family, I would have, I had nothing else to live for. You know, my family didn't care, you know, so, you know, but yeah.
Oh, that's a lot. And I know
it's
we can keep going. We've probably been talking for at least an hour.
I guess we'll get into your stuff next time.
Yeah, maybe. We'll see. Mine's definitely not as traumatic as yours. And I think I had worked through a lot of mine before you came along.
Yeah.
A lot of it, I think. But the trauma I had to do with my previous marriage, and that's what I brought in was the...
Well, you've got some familial problems in there also.
Yeah, but I think, and yes, I did. Yeah. I did. But I think the root of mine had to do with a lot of gaslighting that had happened in my life, a lot of being lied to, a lot of being just victimized by other decisions that other people made or whatever.
And I'm going to say right now, if you're with someone who gaslights you on a continuous basis, you need to get help.
Yeah.
That person that's gaslighting you is not there for you. He's there for himself or herself.
It's a hard place to be.
It's a hard place to be. I had a marriage like that. She had a marriage like that. You're constantly made to feel unworthy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I hope that this podcast episode was in some way.
Yeah.
If it could be encouraging, I hope that it was. Or eye-opening, or however you want to phrase it.
Yeah, if there's a man out there or a woman who wants to contact us, drop us a message in the chat below.
Comment, yeah.
And we will get in touch with you.
And on that note, we are in the process of working through some
training.
Yeah,
we've got some big things coming.
And certifications.
Yeah, we do.
And
I'm excited.
Our intention is to eventually coach people.
Yes.
Coach marriage couples.
Coaches. In our home.
Mm-hmm. I don't know how we're going to do it. We'll work out the details, but we're working through some training and coaching certifications for that. We have a heart for this. So, yeah. So stay tuned for that because eventually, instead of saying, hey, drop the comment, we'll actually just say, hey, if you want to work with us, here's our information, and it'll be in the posting.
Yeah, the
links. So.
And I'm going to just say this one more time. Veterans and non-veteran men and women, you have worth. There is someone on this planet that is a better person because you're alive. I know it doesn't feel like that right now. Look, man, I've been there. I was there last year. I had ruined every relationship that I had ever been in. My kids don't even talk to me. I'm still working through that. You have worth. There is somebody on this planet who loves you.
Mm-hmm.
There's somebody on this planet that would be very sad if you were not here anymore. And just because you kill yourself doesn't mean that your suicide doesn't reverberate all across the community.
Sure.
It destroys families. Think about the long-term consequences of what your kids will have to go through. And I think about my suicide attempts today, and I am so embarrassed. because I was selfish. And I looked for a way out to where I wouldn't hurt anymore, but I didn't think about the consequences of my actions, hurting my wife, hurting my kids, hurting my in-laws, hurting her family and my family. I didn't think about that. And if you need to talk, you can contact Shay. You can contact me in the messages below. And look, please don't become another statistic. Don't do it. And I know that I say this every episode. I know I do, but it's really close to my heart. If you're having feelings of depression and thoughts of suicide, get help. Veterans, the VA is a wonderful resource. We have had very good results with the VA.
What's the number they call?
988. Call 988, the veterans, the VA hotline. If you need someone to walk you through it and you're a veteran, contact me, and I will tell you the proper steps that you can take to get the help that you need. The veteran VA, they don't make it easy, and everything is so compartmentalized. But being veterans, we're used to that. So it takes patience on your part to work with the Veterans Administration. But they're there. And they care.
Yeah,
I've got a great care team through the VA.
Yeah, they care about you.
And just don't do it. Contact somebody that you know, a friend, a loved one, and say, hey, man, I'm feeling bad today. Men, you're not weak because you're depressed. Men, you're worthy. You never lose your worth if you can't go to work one day. You never lose your worth if you get down and depressed. That does not define who you are. And that's it. I'm on my soapbox now.
Yeah. Well, I guess until next time, God bless you all, and yes, we'll see you again soon.
And like I said, drop a comment down below if you need us to contact you in any way, shape, or fashion. I will stay on the phone with you for as long as I have to. Peace.